I first met the devotees in Boston, 1970. And I was coming to the temple. And in those days, it was a very wonderful temple. Satsarup, he was Grihastha, he was the temple president. Vidyananda was temple commander. Giriraj Maharaj was Harinam Sankirtan leader. And the whole press was there, so all the artists. Pradyumna was there, and Bhavananda was interior decorator, so we had every room was a shocking different color, shocking pink, shocking orange. And the house was purple outside, and it was in a very conservative neighborhood. But it was an amazing temple, hard not to join. I was avoiding it, but then 5 months from the day I was coming, then I decided to join. And how it happened was, the devotees told me that Srila Prabhupada is coming. So then they said, how would you like to stay for the weekend and see Srila Prabhupada? I said, yes. So then I stayed, but then the day after he was supposed to come, the day he was supposed to come, he phoned up and said, oh, actually, I'm not coming, but I'm sending 4 sannyasis instead. And one of those sannyasis was Vishnuja Maharaj. It was Gargamuni Brahmananda, Vishnujan, and Subal. And so we had Harinam day and night for the weekend. And after that, I said, well, you know, I'm so happy, why should I go back home? So I went back and said goodbye to my husband, and I joined. And 2 months later, he joined too. We were both coming, but he was a little bit slower. But he was a hippie, and his philosophy was, I won't work. So after I left, I was working a little, you know, so we had a little money after I joined, and he, you know, how could he follow his philosophy? So he became a devotee, because in those days, devotees didn't work. They just were on the street chanting the whole day and night. And so he could do that. But actually, it was Srila Prabhupada who gave me that push, which I needed to take the next step. And that was the first thing he did, Srila Prabhupada. I felt that he pushed me just by saying, he didn't even come, but just by saying he's coming, and then I was able to join the temple, which is, that's what it meant to be a devotee in 1970. And it was very funny, I came here in 1970 to New Vrindavan, there, and then there was some strange talks, but anyway, another strange thing that happened, which I think was actually premeditated, was we came to visit, then we left, and all the visiting devotees, they put us in one bullock cart to go, and they put all our luggage in another bullock cart. And the bullock cart with the luggage somehow fell over, and all the luggage was lost, and we had nothing, we had no possessions. But I had kept my books with me. I was very attached to my Prabhupada's books. I had the original from the boat and all that, so that was saved. But we had no possessions. We left New Vrindavan with nothing. I think it was, you know, arranged somehow by Providence. Anyway, so we went back to Boston, and we're doing Harinam day and night. And it was wonderful. And also we were doing, I was typing for the press, typesetting Macmillan Bhagavad Gita as it is. So the first day I joined, the first day I walked in the temple and stayed, they said, so you have to learn how to read Sanskrit. Here's the Ishopanishad. Now there's the Sanskrit and there's the English, because you have to transliterate when you type Bhagavad Gita. So I learned how to read Sanskrit, and I was typing, transliterating. And we had like, there was a huge machine, typesetting machine. We didn't have computers in those days. So you had to type one line, then read two dials, like C4, and then at the end of the line you make C4, then the next B5, and then you type it on photographic paper, the final, and you would have to set the dial and then type it, and then it would come out straight. So that was typesetting. And if we made a mistake, we'd have to retype it, and they would cut it out and paste it. So cut and paste, right? You wonder what cut and paste was. Well, that's how it started, cut and paste. And layout was, they laid it out all over the floor, and cut and paste it, you know. So it was lay out, literally, and cut and paste. So, yeah, that was 1970 typesetting, and layout was lay up, you know, was out, you know, on the floor, or whatever, they had tables or something. So, yeah, so after six months, Satchel told my husband and I'm sending you to Florida. So how did he send us? Not by plane, not by train, not by bus. Hitchhiking from Boston to Florida. Yeah, but the Doherty's in New York were merciful and they let us collect for a bus ticket. And so, yeah, and we all had like yellow sheets for Grihastas and orange sheets for Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis. The women wore saffron in those days too. So there we were on the road in our flapping yellow sheets with our luggage was some boxes. We didn't have suitcases or anything, just boxes. And we got picked up, you know, to New York at least. And so then, but I didn't meet Prabhupada until Florida. Florida was in Gainesville. There's a famous lecture in this remote corner of the world, so that was, I was there for that. And we followed Srila Prabhupada to the TV stations, and there were some famous. But the first time I actually saw Srila Prabhupada was at the airport in Gainesville. And I was walking behind him the first time, and I felt, okay, I can do this the rest of my life. I can follow Srila Prabhupada. Because I never felt at home in the material world. I never felt like I belonged anywhere. I could, even when they asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up? They gave me all these choices. I said, I don't want to be any of that. It's like, you know, so I chose musician because it wasn't one of those categories. But anyway, yeah, so I met Prabhupada there first. Not much association. But then after 1 year, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter that he wanted 25 devotees to go to India. So from every temple, 2-3 devotees were chosen. We were chosen. And again, Satsarup said, I'm sending you to India. So again, we had to hitchhike, but not to India. It was New York again was merciful, and they let us collect for 2 one-way tickets, $300 each. We went one way because Prabhupada didn't tell us to go back. So we didn't go back. We're still there in India since 72. It's in 1972. And also initiation was by letter. I still have the letter. In those days, the standard was if you lived in the temple for 6 months, then you could get your first initiation. So Satsarup said, wait for your husband 2 more months because he's 2 months behind you. I said, okay, 8 months. And I asked my husband, so let's get initiated. And he said, I'm not ready. I said, well, I'm not going to wait any longer for you. I wrote a letter to Prabhupada. We had to string our own beads. We didn't have any beads. So I had to string my beads, send my beads along with a letter to Prabhupada, who was in India. And I wrote my letter. I quoted from Canto 2 of Bhagavatam. We only had, I think, the first 3 chapters of Canto 2. And I quoted the verse, if you don't get the dust of a pure devotee on your head, you're a dead body. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, if you don't initiate me, then I'm just dead. So he initiated me. And he wrote me a letter back, and he said, now, first birth is from your material father and mother, and your second birth is from your, real birth is from your spiritual master. Now your path is open to go back home, back to Godhead. He gave me 6 instructions in that letter. Chant at least 16 rounds. Strictly follow the 4 regulative principles and read and study all my books, do deity worship, and do Sankirtan preaching. So the first five I've been doing, that is 7 years I was a pujari in Calcutta, 7 years I was doing book distribution and preaching in India, in Bombay, in Maharashtra, Rajasthan, Gujarat. And then since I came to Vrindavan in 93, then I'm reading, studying the books, and teaching the books. But the last one is yet to come, and that is 24 hours be engaged. And Krishna's serious. Maybe someday I'll do some bhajan or something, and maybe 24 hours I'll be engaged. So then he wrote me a second letter, just for no reason at all, out of the blue. I never wrote him. And he said three important qualities you must have in your service. He said you must have sincerity, enthusiasm, and cooperation with the rest of the devotees. So two are personal and one is like the hardest one, cooperation. So then in India, we landed in Juhu, Bombay, which was the most austere place in India, I think, in those days was Juhu, because the men were in a hut, and the hut was the ashram, men's ashram, kitchen, prasadam room, office, everything in one hut. And it was really very bad. Everybody was sick, and we were having, the first day of prasadam, I remember seeing these huge rats running on the rafters inside, and I hope he doesn't fall on my plate. And he didn't, he fell in someone else's. I was really happy. Shouldn't have been happy, but that was, and then the drinking water was, drinking water was another thing. And we had this clay pot with a lid. You take off the lid and all these mosquitoes flew, and we had to drink that. It was our drinking water, so-called. So we were all sick, and so luckily they sent us to Calcutta after 2 weeks. It was austere, but not as bad as Juhu. In Juhu, the ladies' ashram was on the roof of a building, and it was summer. So it was pretty bad. In Calcutta, I was happy I had a roof over my head. There was not much water or electricity, and there were big rats, but still, it was not bad. It was okay. Prabhupada, the first time in India I met Prabhupada was in Vrindavan in 1972. And it was really Vrindavan. It was a very sleepy, Loi Bazaar was a very sleepy, sleepy village. There was nothing with a motor attached to it in the whole village. And there were a few bicycle rickshaws, but they were too expensive for us. They would cost 1 rupee, which we didn't have. And there were peacocks dancing on the main road where the temple is now, because the temple wasn't built yet. It was nothing. They didn't even dig the hole yet in 72. A few huts were there, a few bricks were there. And I think in Bihar Lal, he wasn't there yet. He started a lemonade stand. He's this big, big shop across the street. And he was at first, I think, he started a lemon juice and lassi or something, maybe in 74. I don't think he was there in 72. It was jungle, they call it jungle and forest, all the way up to the first intersection, where now you see they sell sabjis and things. The first crossroad, which is pretty far up, it was just all forest. Nothing, no houses, nothing. It was very beautiful, Vrindavan. We were living in Keshigat. And the best thing is there was no loudspeakers. we could just hear the bells in the morning, and Jamuna was big and clean, and you could just jump in, and you couldn't touch the bottom from Keshigat. It was deep. We used to take our bath there, Vishaka and I, because inside, we were in the Keshigat palace, so-called, and it was really, again, austerity. There was a well, and you had to, get the water up like this, and, there's no lights, and what are you going to see in Mangalarti time? So we just jumped in Jamuna. And you had to worry about the big turtles. You might hit one. Now I don't think they're living there anymore, those big turtles. I think they left. But, yes, Prabhupada was lecturing in the morning on Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the evening, a nectar of devotion lectures. And the main thing he was trying to establish, convince the Brijbasis to accept Westerners as Vaishnavas. They had a hard time with that. So he was using nectar of devotion as a praman, or evidence that anyone can take to devotional service, regardless of birth. So then after his evening class, we would all pile into his room, and he would give us his darshan, maybe 40 of us in this little room, maybe 30, 40. And he would instruct us how to live in Vrindavan. And he said, he told us to be careful of the Babaji's, not to associate with them, because they were just like monkeys. The monkeys were very austere, they didn't wear clothes, and they're vegetarian. But they have many she monkeys. So he said, so don't associate with Babaji's. Then another thing happened. He was sitting in his asana, and there were some bananas at his feet, and one monkey ran in and grabbed the bananas and ran out the door. And Prabhupada said, see how intelligent that monkey is. None of you would dare to do that. He said, but the monkey is intelligent for eating. He said, don't be intelligent for eating. So Prabhupada. And then one time, he singled me out, actually, in his darshan, and he said, some words came out of his mouth that were very prophetic, as we heard this other Mataji saying, devotee says something, it comes true. So it came true. One thing happened in Vrindavan and another thing happened in Mayapur with Srila Prabhupada and myself. So in Vrindavan, he said to me, my sister tells me that you speak Srimad Bhagavatam very nicely. Well, I never spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, and so I was completely puzzled. I couldn't say anything. I was bewildered, because I never spoke Bhagavatam and had to speak of nicely. So then I was trying to rack my brain. Why did she say that? So then I remembered, oh yeah, Jamashtami day, our habit was to read Krishna book from morning till night, and we took turns. And it was my turn in the afternoon, and I don't remember anyone in my audience except Pishima, Prabhupada's sister. She was sitting in front of me, and I was reading Krishna book, and I was being very dramatic, and she was crying. And she didn't know English. She only knew, but I was reading in English, and then she told Prabhupada, she speaks Bhagavatam very nicely. That was my beginning of my Bhagavatam career, but 30 years later, I started speaking Bhagavatam. So, and I never thought about it, I'm going to speak Bhagavatam in my life. It was after I was a devotee, maybe 30 years, yeah, at least 30 years. And then I started teaching Bhakti Vaibhava and Bhakti Vedanta courses. So that is Srila Prabhupada. Whatever a pure devotee says, even if it's indirect, it comes true. Another thing Prabhupada said was that if you, every day, read one chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam or sing the verses, after 1 year you will become a scholar. I did that many years, not just 1 year. I was every day singing with a tambura. I was singing like one chapter, but not the whole chapter, just the prayers. I would just pick out some prayers and go through the whole Bhagavatam like that. Take me about 6 months. And so Srila Prabhupada's words always come true. So two lessons. The first was that he makes you take the next step in your spiritual life. And the second was, whatever he says must come true. And the second thing happened in Mayapur. The second thing, I was in Calcutta. I was pujari in Calcutta temple, Radha Govinda. And so Pradyumna came with Srila Prabhupada. And he said to me, how would you like to go with Srila Prabhupada to Mayapur? I said, yes. He said, so Srila Prabhupada is translating Chaitanya Charitamrita. He needs someone to type Chaitanya Charitamrita. So all you have to do is learn how to read Bengali. And we're leaving tomorrow. I said, no problem, I'm going. Gave me the book, Bengali book. It took me an hour. I learned how to transliterate, and off I was the next morning with Srila Prabhupada. To Mayapur, again, austere conditions, 1973. We stayed in the Lotus Building, which was under construction. And there were no windows. There were holes in the wall. There were doors without handles. Like, you couldn't really, you couldn't lock it, of course. There's nothing to lock anyway. We didn't have anything. But there were, it means that there was these huge winds. It was Vaishakh month in May. And the doors would just blow open, you know. We put a marble slab, you know, from construction, and they would just blow the slab across the floor. Now, the ladies' ashram was in one room that had no door. So we had to go through the next room to go out the door, but the next room had no floor. And we were on the first floor. So, but it was about a 4-foot drop, so we had to walk the plank to get out, in and out. And the bathrooms were there, but there was no pipes in the bathrooms. So we had to go down and, you know, bring up a bucket of water with a pump and take our chances on the veranda. And then we had to go out somewhere in some faraway place for the outhouse, which we didn't do because we were too scared. So anyway, austerity again. So one day, another room, I was in another room typing Chaitanya Charitamrita. I had this big Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita open. I had earphones listening to Prabhupada. So I would hear Prabhupada speak, I would read the Bengali, and I would type it in English, so it transliterate in English letters. So Prabhupada came in my window, he looked, he said, "Oh, you know Bengali?" I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." I just learned the day before, you know, how to read. So, okay, very good editor, come to my room. So I went to his room. He said, "So, you know Bengali?" "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." He said, "So, you should learn how to type in Bengali language, and we will do many books together." So that was the second thing Prabhupada said, and sure enough, I started doing many books together. I've got this Bhagavad Gita at a glance, Srimad Bhagavatam at a glance. This is the full Bhagavatam. And then I've also, this is a picture for every chapter. This is a picture for every verse of Gita. And then I've started Bhagavatam, picture for every verse. So that's already 11 books with a picture for every verse, first 9 cantos. So I brought one set with me, so whoever wants it tonight, they can take by it. That I'll sell at the seminar. I have at the seminar from tomorrow. And I have a few of these, so whoever wants can buy them. So that was the second thing that came true, that I started writing books. And of course, at that time, I thought, wow, I'm going to travel with Prabhupada and type. But it didn't happen because, meanwhile, back in Calcutta, they got a new temple president, and all the pujaris were afraid of him, and they all left. It was Garga Muni. So I became the head pujari before I be back. I became the head pujari in Calcutta. And so, but actually then I did learn how to type in Bengali before that, when Bengali Brahmachari was teaching me. So I said to him, "Look, you just remember where the keys are, and you don't have to look at the keys, you just look at the paper and type." And he said, "Oh, now I understand what Srila Prabhupada told me. Prabhupada told me you teach her and you also learn from her." And so my teaching career began also back in 73. I was teaching him touch typing in Bengali. but I never did much of that. I became the pujari again, full-time. So that's where I had most of my association with Srila Prabhupada, was in Calcutta, Radha Govinda Temple, as pujari. And so Srila Prabhupada would come often, because in those days they would not go directly from the airport to Mayapur. He would go Mayapur, Calcutta, airport, or airport, Calcutta, Mayapur. So he was always coming through on his way to and from Mayapur. But he would never stay very long because he said his wife is there, so he didn't want to stay long in Calcutta. And he even thanked us, "Thank you for staying here and preaching. I cannot stay here." And we had many, many austerities there. And he would mention them in his classes. "I know you're not even getting milk." And one year he said to us, "This year you don't have to do Chaturmasya, because you're already not getting milk the whole year, you know, so what to speak of 1 month." Yeah, we didn't have, because you couldn't get pure milk or pure ghee. Some of the Australian devotees, they brought ghee for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada sold it to Garga Muni, and Garga Muni sold it also. Anyway, this was Prabhupada. So anyway, it was, yeah, they had a rasa. He called him Garga Muni. But he did, it was okay. We had good money when he was president. And so Prabhupada often, sometimes he would praise us and sometimes he would chastise us. In India, it was a very familiar relationship because the devotees, as we were very young and we didn't know how to do anything in India. It's very different from the West. People are very indirect. When they say yes, they mean no. When they say tomorrow, it means never. So, and in the Hindi language, the word kal, it means yesterday and tomorrow. So there's no concept of time either. It could be yesterday, it could be tomorrow, you're going to get it. You know, yesterday, you get it. You know. Anyway, so Prabhupada, sometimes he was our president, sometimes he was our temple commander, and sometimes he was our GBC. The GBC ran away, I remember, one time. And Prabhupada became our GBC for 2 months. So it was very close in that way in India. One time I was doing Mangalarti. I had to do all the artis, big ones. Mangalarti, Jasadidis morning and night, wake them up morning, put them to sleep at night, wake them up again, put them to sleep at 1 o'clock. All the big artis had to do. And one time I was doing Mangalarti and I was turned around to offer the ghee lamp to the devotees. Prabhupada was standing right behind me. And I almost dropped the ghee lamp. I thought, you know, should I offer it to him or should I do a puja or what should I do? So I think I did a quick puja and gave him the ghee lamp. And the whole Mangalarti was standing right behind me, watching. You know, it's about 6 inches away. There was nothing separating, only one chain to separate the deity room and the temple. He was watching me. So that was the most concentrated, focused, nervous Mangalarti ever did. And after that, I thought, well, I should do all my service like that. Prabhupada standing right behind me and watching me. Sometimes he chastised us. He said, why is the ghee lamp so dirty? And he would, you know, he would call us up. Who has done this? I thought he should have said, who has not done this? But anyway, you just want to hide, you know, you don't want to be there, but there's nowhere to go. You just hope there's a little hole in the floor and you can go in, but you know, you have to stand and take it. And then he would praise us also. And one thing about Radha Govinda, now it's not happening, was that there was a window behind the deities, open all the time, and the bees used to fly inside. So on Radha Govinda's side, bumblebees would come. And I had a man who was donating 50 garlands every day. So I was changing the flowers 5 times a day. And I had every day 144 lotuses besides, 144 roses, all the flowers that were in season, just abundance of flowers everywhere. An amazing fragrance was becoming from the altar. So the bees were coming. And on Radha Govinda's side, they would sit inside the lotus, we had big lotus flowers, very fragrant. And they would sit inside the lotuses. There were 2 bees. They would circumambulate the deities and then go in the lotus. And on Jagannath's side, there were tiny, tiny bees, and they would sit on the garlands. Just like in Vaikuntha, it says the bees are on the garlands. So on Jagannath's side, it was like Vaikuntha, and on Radha Govinda's side, it was like Golok Vrindavan, it's a bumblebees, Radharani. And so Prabhupada said, he said that when the bees are coming to the worship, Krishna is pleased with the worship. So we had the bees coming every day to the worship. We have the bees, opulence of bees. You see descriptions of Dwaraka, Vrindavan, bees are there always, following Krishna, following Balaram, followed by and Radharani. And also even in the bedroom of Rukmini, they had garlands with swarms of bees in her bedroom. Can you imagine? Anyway, so bees are an important part of the spiritual world. And so we had them in Calcutta. We had the spiritual world. And then one time he sent one artist, I think it was Vishnu or Pandu, and he came and asked us for a picture of our deities, of Krishna. And Prabhupada instructed him, you should paint Krishna like that, very young. He liked a very young Krishna. And my idea was Krishna was Kaishar, age like about 11 years old, a very young Krishna. So one time he praised us. Well, actually in many, many lectures, he would appreciate the deity worship. One time he said, this deity worship is under the control of Srimati Radharani. She's actually doing it. So we were just her assistants somehow. And there was also great austerity there at the same time. Big, huge cockroaches. And the lights would go out at night, they would start flying. And they would land on you. And you couldn't see them, you could feel them. And one time I had Krishna's heavy, heavy marble plates, and they landed on me, and nothing I could do until I got to the deity room. Put down the plates, get them off of me. Anyway, that was austerity. And 10:30, the rats would come out, very big rats. Anyway, I only got bit once, so it wasn't too bad. Yes, we had bats also. Everything, a lot of species in that temple. So then Prabhupada, he would praise us. One time it was Shingararchi. And Prabhupada came, and he sat on the Vyasa Sun. He called us up, Pujaris, my husband and I. I used to dress Krishna, my husband used to dress Radharani, and I would do all the flower decoration also. And so he called us up and he said, thank you very much for worshiping the deity so nicely. And when we offered obeisances, he said something which we didn't hear. So afterwards, one sannyasi said, did you hear what Srila Prabhupada said when you were offering obeisances? He said, no. He said, Prabhupada said, be blessed. So we got the blessings, the spiritual master, which is something, you know, the goal of your life. But then the next day, I understood, well, I got them yesterday, now I have to earn them again. Every day you have to keep earning the blessings. It's not like you get them once and you retire. Oh, I've got the blessings. No, you have to keep earning them. Still try to earn the blessings. Srila Prabhupada. And one time he chastised us again. It was Shingararchi, and the problem was we had these wooden doors and we didn't have time to open them and clean underneath them before Prabhupada came. So we opened them and there were three rose petals under the door. Prabhupada called us up, why is it so dirty? And my husband said the wrong thing, negligence? Oh, and Prabhupada said the word like he was spitting it out. It was the wrong thing to say, negligence. So the art, it was very wonderful being in India with Srila Prabhupada. And I went on a few morning walks in Juhu, Bombay, and I was late, I remember running to catch up, and then when I caught up, Prabhupada stopped the whole morning walk, turned around, looked at me, Hare Krishna, you know, I felt so good because who am I, you know, one among thousands, some insignificant devotee, but he had the time to notice me, you know, like he acknowledged my presence, which was, I thought, very nice. I don't remember anything about the walk except that. But another time he was giving, I was always trying to figure Prabhupada out, like on the morning walk. He was like in his 70s, we were in our 20s, and he was walking so fast, and I was watching, I was trying to figure it out, you know, how does he do it? We're tired. He's not tired. He's going so fast. It didn't make sense. There was no logic. So by my intelligence, I couldn't figure it out. And when he was giving class also, I would try to figure him out. It would look like he was in another dimension, kind of like a movie sometimes, like you watch a movie and I was trying to figure out. where is he? Is he here? Is he somewhere else? Or is he being reflected from somewhere? You know, it was like, it kind of was the way he looked. But I never could figure out with my intelligence. It was only by devotion. If you do something with love, then you can understand the spiritual master. And so then, one time he was giving Gita class, Calcutta, and all the men had the Gita book. I didn't, the ladies didn't have the book. So it was ladies' turn to chant, and I said it from memory. And I said the sloka, Avachananti Mamudha, Manushintana Mashita. So he was very happy that I knew the verse. And he really liked if we learned the verses. So when I was Pujari, I spent time learning verses. I liked, that was my nature, to read and to memorize things. I liked to do it. It was just fun. It was my recreation. Well, it was the Pujari, just to learn slokas and chapters and things. So Prabhupada liked that. He liked us to know the books. So then that was mostly what I can remember. Also, I was typing in Calcutta. I remember typing Canto 5, Srimad Bhagavatam. And there was a verse, Lakshmi Devi, the first prayer that she speaks in Canto 5, Chapter 18. And it's Om Ram Rim Harum Om Namo Bhagavate Rishikeshaya. And it goes on and on. And in the purport, Prabhupada said, this is a mantra. You should learn these mantras. These are very powerful mantras. And I said, oh, Prabhupada's giving me a mantra, huh? I'm gonna learn this mantra. Then I played back the tape 5 times. I just made sure I heard it every word. So I said, he's giving me a mantra, okay. So I would take the typing very personally, you know. I did type in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the whole Navadvipa Lila chapters, Adi Lila 13 to 17. And there was a part about Narayani there too, so I thought, okay, I like my name. It's there and everywhere. It's the name of Tulsi, it's the name in Shivas's niece who got ecstasy by getting prasad from Lord Chaitanya. She's the name of Radharani, name of Durga, name of Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi. She's in everywhere. I thought, yes, many meanings, I like that. Not just one meaning to the name. So then Prabhupada left, and I can share one experience I had after he left with you. It was in 1994, and I had done many services. I had done the Pujari work, I had done the book distribution, then I had a son named Govinda. And so then I had him for 7 years, and then he went to Gurukul in Vrindavan, and I was in Vrindavan, and I didn't have a service. So I was praying for service. What should I do next? I've already done so many things. And there didn't seem to be any service in the temple for me. I asked 3 times, and no, we don't have anything there for you. So I was just praying and I was chanting. So, well, until I find out what I should do, I'm just going to read, because that's what I like to do. I'll just read. Well, after 3 months of reading, I got, you know, I also had a japa reform, and I was chanting and very attentively. And then it came in my chanting, inspiration. Oh, you're reading so much, you should share what you read. You should share it with others. I said, yeah, that seems like the correct thing to do. I should share the reading. And then, so then I got it confirmed by devotees, by the astrologer, by different ways that, yes, I should teach. So then, but I was searching for some confirmation from Srila Prabhupada personally. So I thought, how can I get this? Now he's not in this world. So I went to the Samadhi in Vrindavan. As soon as I walked in the door, there was a tape of Srila Prabhupada playing, that they used to play these lectures. And Srila Prabhupada said, Do you think the deity is made of stone? I don't know, Prabhupada, you're here. Do you think the acharyas are so foolish they worship stone? Prabhupada, I believe you're here, okay, but I need some more personal, you know, guidance. I said, okay, maybe let me go to the Prabhupada's house, because every day they have a letter in the desk and they change the letter regularly, and maybe something is there. And sure enough, I went there and there was a letter, I think it was to Ranadir, and the letter said, okay, now you are one of my senior disciples, so I'm depending on you to spread this movement. You have learned the art of Krishna consciousness, now I want you to teach it purely for others. I said, okay, confirmation. I should teach. But there was no facility in Vrindavan in 1994. Women could not speak, give class in the temple. The VIHE, Vrindavan Institute, was only for men. They had men's bhakti shastri. No women allowed. So I said, okay, I'm supposed to teach. So how am I going to do this? So I was living outside in one house belonging to a life member. I started teaching in my room, but then after some time, the chokidars said, you can't bring people here. It's a private house. So then I went to the top of the Krishna Balaram guest house on the roof, and I was teaching up there. And then after, in 1995, I got my own place in Shesha's house behind the MVT. So I taught there for 2 years. And then 1997, after 3 years just doing it, then they started the women's bhakti shastri and I started teaching. And then 1998, I taught the brahmacharis too. And then I started traveling to Europe in 1998 to Russia and Radhadesh teaching. So what I learned from that is that you don't have to wait for the facility, you have to make the facility. You may not have any facility, but that doesn't matter. You have the order of the spiritual master. So for me, that was not the order, that was it, you know. I read that letter, I got the inspiration when I was chanting. I wrote a whole poetry book on that in 1994, just what I was going through. And that inspiration to my life's mission. Travel, teach, preach, and do other things too as well. But that was, so I understood, yeah, oh, you can still have associated with Srila Prabhupada. Even now, everybody can have it. He's here waiting for you to just listen, and he will tell you what to do. You have to pray very sincerely, chant very sincerely, and serve him. And I learned, even after he left, I learned, you know, if you get an order, you just do it. And we did that in the old days. You know, we got an order, we just did it. Didn't matter if we had money or no money, and it just required one person who has a desire to do it. So, yeah, I just had a desire. Another thing I learned from that is that if you have a spiritual desire, then nothing can stop you. It's ahaituki, it's causeless. It's a spiritual thing, and there's no impediment to fulfill spiritual desires. Material desires, so many impediments. Spiritual desires is no impediment. Whatever may look like an impediment, it can be an opportunity to help you, to do your service. So that was my association with Srila Prabhupada. I'll stop here. If you have any questions, you can ask. Mm-hmm.
Did you and your husband ever discuss what would have been the proper response?
Pardon me?
Did you and your husband ever discuss what would be the proper response to give to Srila Prabhupada of why the rose petals were not cleaned? Because you said, he said...
what was the proper... I don't think there was any proper response. Because Prabhupada could defeat any argument, even if it was a correct response. I mean, Shudakirti, he talks about that, you know, the correct response. He found one when Prabhupada chastised him. You won't be intelligent before you're 80. When he did something wrong. And so Shudakirti was thinking, oh, Prabhupada's angry, what shall I say? And then he said to Prabhupada, oh, thank you, Prabhupada, I thought it would take much longer. And Prabhupada said, yeah, we used to say that when we were young boys. We would tell each other. Shivakirti was smart. That would be the proper response, I guess. There's no such thing. Shudakirti, he knew, you know, and he shouldn't say anything to Prabhupada. He would just let Prabhupada go on with his, you know, arguments. And one time Prabhupada was going on chastising him. And after 5 minutes, Prabhupada said to him, "You're no fun, you don't fight back." Tamal would fight back, you know. Tomorrow, Shudakirti would sit there watching him. Oh, how can they fight with Prabhupada? A different devotee said different rasas. I was very much awe and reverence. I didn't have a familiar relationship with Prabhupada. I would be very, like, you know, scared. He did say a few things, but they weren't so important. But, what was the proper response? No, there's no such thing. It's a proper response. When he chastised you, I guess Shudakirti was the best to give the proper response. Yes?
When you were staying in Keshikat, and you said you could go to Prabhupada's room. Is this where Prabhupada's room is?
Damodar.
In the Damodar temple?
Yeah. We had to walk everywhere. We had to walk from Keshikat to Damodar. And then we were staying at Keshikat, but the lectures were at Damodar, Radha Damodar, morning and evening. So his room in Radha Damodar. We were going in that room.
So you never left India, in fact?
No, not really. I came back actually for 1 year to help type Prabhupada Lamrita, and then we went back. But basically, I'm in India since 72. Yes, still. I'm in Vrindavan for 22 years, in India for 42 years. So, yeah, I'm more Indian than Western. I think I always was. And when I was 10 years old, I was sitting in my classroom and looking at the kids, and I was thinking, I'm not one of them. I don't know where I'm from. Maybe I'm from another country. Maybe I'm from another planet. But one thing I know, I'm not American. I'm not one of these. It was really rough. That was a 10, you know. I was 22 when I joined. And then I finally found where I belong. With Prabhupada.
Did you ever doubt that?
In India?
Did you ever doubt why you were doing it?
No, I never doubted it. I had no doubts in India. When I was in 86, I was starting to doubt whether I was a devotee or not. You kind of go through an archanavritti and doubts come. I was doubting myself sometimes. Like, oh, am I a demon or am I a devotee? What am I? You know, start thinking. But doubts come up, but I never doubted Prabhupada in the books. Other people, I remember I was driving to Gitanagari with I can't remember his name, Gora something. Anyway, I don't know his name.
Gorahari?
Yeah, Gorahari. And he was pointing out, see that mountain over there? Prabhupada said that was a flying mountain that got its wings cut off. I said, yeah, wow, ooh. I just believe everything, you know. This is not a problem. Because it's so nice, flying birds, and all these things. Why not? You know, I haven't gone there, and these people have gone there, and they have that vision. Yeah.
You mentioned that you were trying to figure Prabhupada out.
Yeah, I was.
So did you ever feel like there was a point when you could understand your spiritual master more clearly?
Like more after he left. When he was here, I was so young and. Not very advanced, not very developed, so I couldn't understand him. Just loved him, though. We did love him. We had faith in him. We had such a We would do anything, you know, for Prabhupada. And we thought we could do anything too, you know. He gave us that feeling. He empowered us to. He had so much faith in us, you know, more than we did in ourselves. So he gave us the feeling we could do impossible things, and we did do impossible things for him. We did it. No, I didn't. After he left, then I got closer actually to him with listening all the tapes, reading books, and serving him in different ways, Yeah, he would in his class, but his classes were so. I mean, it was so much fun to watch him because he would do all these mudras, you know. And there was one class lecture Srila Prabhupada gave, and they showed it to one dance teacher in South India, and he showed it to his students, and he said, just watch this video. He goes through all the 28 mudras in his one class. Yes, you know, like this, like this, like his eyes get big.
Can you find the video?
I don't know which video it was, no. I couldn't find it, but it was Atmatattva who gave that memory of Prabhupada. So he would know. I don't know where he lives. In India somewhere. So I mean, it was an experience to watch him, watch Srila Prabhupada speak or do anything. It was like nobody in this world could do like he did. It was really from another world. We never saw anybody so graceful and so nice. Just to watch how he moved his hands and his eyes and his everything. Yes, you have a question? Okay. No more questions, so maybe she would like to speak?
Yes. Thank you so much, Narayana Prabhu. That's all I'll give for Narayana Prabhu. How do you